This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 44, with public speaker and supporter of informal self-education, Ashley Zahabian.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Angles of Latitude podcast. This is the show where we talk with fellow creators about how they found their true groove in life by doing work that matters. Not only to them, but possibly the rest of the world. Every Thursday, we publish another conversation about the art and science of truly living a life of passion and how you, too, can do the work you're meant to do. Today, your hosts are myself, JC Preston, and Ginger Kern. We're part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated to helping creative entrepreneurs do passion-filled work and, more importantly, connecting them with the resources and community they need to help share their message with others. This session is powered by the Traveler's Mindset. If you've thought about traveling around the world to places you've never been before, but haven't quite pulled the trigger, there's probably a few concerns that you have going through your head. Maybe you've thought of one of the following. Traveling is pretty expensive. I don't have that kind of money. How do I even start preparing to travel abroad? How do I start exploring when I get there? I won't have any fun because I don't know anyone there. You know, these are just some of the concerns that many people have when thinking about traveling. If you want to get these questions answered, then Ginger has prepared a great course for you. It's called the Travel Savvy eCourse. In it, you'll find all kinds of useful information, including how to prepare to go, dealing with the airport, what to do when you get there, and how to properly set out on your new adventure. If traveling abroad is something that you're serious about doing in your not-too-distant future, then I'd highly recommend checking this course out via newinceptions.com/travelsavvy. Again, that's newinceptions.com/travelsavvy. Also, I want to take the time to announce that my ebook called The Six Cornerstones of a Successful Online Business is finally available. And if you're like me, you want to know everything you need to know before you start your online business. Well, here's the truth and what I found out this past year. You never will know everything. But I will say that you can start with a fundamental plan of attack. In this ebook, my goal is to help you cut through the fluff of everything that is out there and focus on six key components that will help you succeed in whichever online business you're starting. Much of the content that I share in this ebook is from years of research on some of the big names there out there because, just like you, I wanted to step off on the right foot. Some of those names include Pat Flynn, Gary Vaynerchuk, Brendon Burchard, and of course, the guys over at Fizzle. You can check out the ebook over at newinceptions.com/sixcornerstones. And again, that address is newinceptions.com/sixcornerstones. So moving on, today's chat was with someone that I think many of you might be familiar with. And if you're not, you'll be soon because, well, she's just a complete rock star. Her name is Ashley Zahabian. And for those of people that know her, she actually kind of has a reputation as being a young female Gary V. And in fact, when she did an opening talk at an event he was at, that's really when I started paying attention to her because she really, really has a big presence about her. So in this particular chat, we talk about how she became an overnight success in this past year, how someone can move from a caged life to a charged life like she did, and what she has planned in the next 5 years of her career. We also talk a little bit about her thoughts about the whole Manish Shetty appearance on Shark Tank, and why she doesn't worry about using clips from movies in her videos on YouTube. So don't forget to check out the show notes available at newinceptions.com/session44, and I'll be back after the conversation to fill in anything we might have missed. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome again to another edition of the Angles and Latitude podcast. I'm just coming off of a weekend here and booting up for the week, and it's Monday. And usually on Mondays, I don't record. It's actually my writing day. But with today's guest, I think you'll understand why we got her on when we could.
But before we get on to our guest, however, I want to point out that I'm joined by our local transformative travel guru. And in fact, she's today's co-host as well, Ginger Kern. And Ginger, how are you doing today?
Hey, JC. Thanks for having me on again as a co-host. Super excited to be here and talk to Ashley for a bit. But yeah, have been traveling, actually. I was in Puerto Rico for about a week. And man, that is a cool place.
Isn't it?
Like, yeah. Biodiversity. I loved it. There's this bioluminescent bay there that's the brightest in the entire world. So you got to check it out.
Yeah. That was one of the places that I was not able to go to because when Maria and I went down there for our honeymoon, let me tell you, I mean, our travel agent put us in a place where you could walk to everything, but it was nothing that really you would want to necessarily see as a tourist. It was like local stuff. Right. Yeah. And it's just like, it's not exactly the same thing. So maybe with you, I don't know. Did you like do what I suggested before you went, kind of get a car and just travel around or?
We definitely got a car. That is the way to go. So like lots of freedom, spontaneity. We planned maybe like 24 hours in advance of where we would be the next day and just then went and like went and did it, which was awesome. So yeah, lots of surprises.
That's awesome.
Sure. It was so fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm glad that you had a great experience down there. So, you know, in this show, we usually deconstruct people who are creating a lifestyle, building it on their own terms, and asking them how they went from living a life of conformity to blazing their own trail. And many times they have a eureka moment after spending tons of time and resources going through traditional education and basically getting a career that doesn't really vibe with them all that much. And, you know, the system that, you know, you have formal education and then you have the ivory towers of corporate America, you know, it really makes us all the same. But, you know, some are luckier than a lot of the guests that are on the show that have gone through that corporate America world and have figured it out in an earlier age. You know, for me, I didn't really figure things out until I hit 30, and maybe even slightly before that. A buddy of mine, Mark Nathan, that I'm helping him promote his book right now, he actually got financially free by the age of 27. So that was a little bit better. But today's guest is the ripe old age of 21 and is making a splash in the motivational world. And she's done this through her lineup of videos on YouTube, as well as through coaching and speaking. And in fact, one of our guest first videos on YouTube, she talked about how she wanted to do things she does and how she's able to accomplish those things by becoming unhuman, right?
Yes.
Which is really interesting. Like a lot of people is like, well, to be more connected to the work that you want to do, you need to become more human. You need to not try to be so fake. So, but if you see the video, it makes more sense. But, you know, that was one of the first many of videos that this past year that she's been throwing up on YouTube and Facebook. And there was one particular video that was called The Value of Being Valuable, which essentially back in March put her up on my radar. But outside of all this, you know, she's been featured in Entrepreneur Magazine, Huffington Post, you know, is really starting to arrive on the speaking arena and big in detail. And in fact, back in April, she did an opening talk for Gary Vee and David Osborne at the RECN Big Life event in Maryland. And don't know too much about what RECN is. Maybe she can tell us what that's about. But anyway, with all that said and without further ado, let's introduce Ashley. Ashley, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure. I'm so excited to have this conversation and be able to share my experiences with everybody because I'm so passionate about watching people really take who they are and what they love to do and creating an entire lifestyle around it. Because I, you know, I'm just a huge believer that there's over a million ways to succeed and everybody has their own and it has to be created. So I'm excited to be here and share the knowledge. And again, thank you guys both for having me.
Total pleasure.
Totally.
So really to say things, and I mean, you just had plenty of growth this past year, and, you know, just making a powerful motivation videos using popular movies and, you know, going to direct camera, and then finally you're now on stage, and, you know, all this is really great work, but I mean, that's a heck of a ride. And I guess my first question is your success as overnight, and I say this in quotes, overnight as it seems. I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but as there are people who have struggled to make a dent in the motivational space for years and years, and you're 21. How did a 21-year-old who most would say, including Gary, that people in their 20s need to go live a life first before they start helping others?
Yeah. So first and foremost, Gary's completely right. You have to live out before you, I mean, you can't teach if you don't experience. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate, and there's a weird word to use for this, I was fortunate enough at 14 years old to be hit with a very hard battle that allowed me to live life at a very young age where most people don't. And I was, you know, hit with anorexia, which put me on my deathbed at a very young age, 14 years old. So the next 4 years of my life I spent in self-development in a hospital. So when you go through that kind of experience and you're kind of isolated, when you're isolated, you have no choice but to be yourself because nobody's watching you. And when you know yourself so well at a young age, you're able to grow more because you're not like that. Those high school years that most people are just like making those mistakes, trying to be somebody else. I was forced to be myself or else I would die. So like, I know myself so well, and I've learned my brain, and I've learned how to recondition my brain into death and then out of death. And you know what, I would say the main message I learned, like, When I conditioned my brain into death, and it was like it happened so slowly. I mean, first it's just eating healthier, and then it's just working out normally, and then it's working out a little bit more, and then it's eating a little bit less, and then it's eating a little bit less, and cutting out this and cutting out that. It happened so slowly, but compared to the overall picture, I literally put myself in death in 4 months, and it took me 4 years to get out of it. And what that taught me about the brain was that it's so much easier to recondition our mind into something negative than into something positive, because the negative things in life, well, you know, the things that are bad for us always feel good. So for me to recondition my brain into, like, you know, starving myself or doing this or going into a bad habit or being lazy or sleeping in or whatever it was that was unhealthy for myself was so easy for me because it aligned with my instincts. You know, our instincts don't want anything but survival. That's it. Like the only thing our mind is born with is survival. You know how to eat, you know how to walk, you know how to this, you know how to talk, whatever. Anything extra, like if you're trying to do anything extra for yourself, that's up to you. So those extra 4 years that I had to recondition my brain out of death took forever. And it was so hard. And, you know, again, like I'm not, Gary Vee, he's right. You have to experience life before you can teach. Now, granted, every sentence he says is not for every single individual out there. I mean, I don't take that as a personal sentence. I love Gary Vee. I think he's amazing. And everything he says is, it has so much value behind it, and you can tell that he's had a lot of experience in his life.
Right.
But I wouldn't say that he's wrong. You do have to experience life. And it wasn't an overnight success because my journey really started at 14 years old and not at 19 when I first started speaking. It started at 14 when I started developing the mindset to speak. So from 14 to 21, that was 7 years. And even back then, I mean, since I was like 17, 18, I was writing articles and doing things like that, getting my name out. And the only reason I'm doing well right now is because of the work I put in. Now, work doesn't necessarily mean I was putting out videos, but I was working in the hospital, away from my friends, no school, no phone, no TV, no computer, no nothing. Okay, so like it was deserved, you know. So when I came out there, the hard work that nobody saw, it was finally seen, and people are like, oh, well, that was an overnight. No, it wasn't. Because while you were partying in high school, dating, hooking up with your little buddy, I was in a hospital working, you know.
Right.
So it wasn't overnight. It's never overnight, and it's not possible to be overnight.
Yeah. Right.
That's powerful. And that, again, that goes along with a lot of the stuff that he talks about. Just like, you know, when he's talking about how he was working those late nights when all of his buddies, you know, early 20s or whatever, were out partying and whatnot, and he was spending all that time in. So
I've never been to a house party in my life.
Nice.
I've never been to one.
Love
never.
That.
No. Never been to one in my life.
Yeah. Well, you're not missing much, quite frankly.
So. Yeah.
No, I know that.
And you know what's funny is that I I was, but I was always more of like the host and more of the,
yes,
the, you know, person, right, that kind of introduced people to other people or maybe make sure that everybody got home safely and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, you're not, yes, you're not really missing too much.
Yeah.
So, but you did go to school and you in fact studied at the Feliciano Center for Entrepreneurship and,
yes.
You know, that at Purdue, you know, I studied entrepreneurship as a grad student. However, our focus was really more on tech startups. And, mm-hmm, you know, what precisely, because I know that I have some background knowledge and random like factoids in my head. If someone needs help with like, you know, VC money or, you know, angel investors or law, what's an LLC or something like that. But mm-hmm, what have you been able to leverage from your experience from Montclair?
Well, the entrepreneurial program there. So I study economics. That's my mm-hmm major. Mm-hmm. The Feliciano Center was an extra education that I took part of. And what I was able to take out of there was a lot because they actually gave us seed money to start our own company.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. So it wasn't like you're just learning about entrepreneurship. It was, you were just, you started a company, we pitched it to investors. We, you know, we fought for $10,000. Yeah. So going through that whole process, we created the pitch deck. We went out and validated it. We had to create a prototype. I mean, we did it all. And it showed me the first span, the beginning span of like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you start. And I think that is essentially, there's two main parts. There's starting. Okay. Once you start, the rest of it kind of flows because it becomes habit after a certain while. And then there's bringing it to market. Those are two different things. So the bringing to market for me was always easy because I'm a huge fan of validation. And it's like, if I don't validate something, I won't bring it to market. So if I don't ask the market directly if this is what they want, I won't bring it to the market. So every single time I brought anything, I mean, even including my voice, you know, there was a first in the beginning of phases of speaking, I asked the audience. I mean, my Snapchat's pretty large. I asked them all the time, you know, like, do you like it when I speak about this? Or do you like it when, or I'll directly ask them, here's five topics, snap me back, which one do you want me to speak about? Then the majority, I'll put that video out. And then it does really well because that's what they asked for, you know? So it's like, it's always bringing about validation. And the whole part of creating a pitch deck and the funding and all that stuff, I mean, I don't even look at that as business. Like, I look at that as like emotional intelligence, like understanding what people want, how they're feeling. Like when I'm going to a venture capital, I'm not talking about my product 24/7. I'm talking about what it's already done for the market, mm-hmm, you know, like, and if it doesn't do that, then I'm not even going to the venture capital, because if I put myself in their shoes, why would I invest in a company that hasn't even sold anything? Why would I give you money when you, right, haven't sold anything? That doesn't make any sense, unless you're looking at a seed funder, but that's different, right? But if I'm a venture capital and you're coming to me and you're saying, I have this awesome product, I don't really care how awesome it is. If you don't have positive upscale sales that are continuously doing well, well, then I'm essentially funding a dead company, or it's not even a business yet. It's just a hobby, right, because, yeah, you haven't sold anything. So it's like things like that to me are common sense, because that correlates the same mindset that I take to a venture capital is the same mindset I take to a relationship. Why would I ask you to be with me if I have nothing to bring to the table? If I haven't had positive results for myself, if I can't love myself positively, why would I be able to love you positive? You know what I mean? Like all these little mindsets in business, it's emotional intelligence. It's the way we know ourselves. It's the way we communicate in all aspects of our life, you know? And that's the way I see it. And for me, business is just a title. It's not really business advice. It's life advice. It's character advice. It's self-development. And if you develop yourself enough, you will see the crossover between business and, I guess, common sense. It's not so common.
Did you see the little blip about Manish Sethi over the weekend? About him being on Shark Tank?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
What was it?
Okay, so Ramit's brother, Manish, has started a company called Pavlok, which is basically a little device that you strap on your wrist and helps you like quit bad habits, right? Mm-hmm. And oh my God, like what he did to, oh crap, what's his name? O'Leary?
Man. Kevin, yeah.
Oh my gosh. You got to check that out. That's crazy.
Oh, wait. Is that the episode where he was just like, I want everybody but you?
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, I saw that. I did see that. I saw that. I was watching it the other night.
Yeah, don't do that on a regular basis. I mean,
honestly, I will say two things. He was not right for saying that, but Kevin, like, I would never work with, I personally would not work with Kevin after that.
Yeah.
The way he reacted just completely showed a lot of insecurity. I get that it was disrespectful, but if that was me, I mean, I would have just been like, okay, go pick. I mean, look, venture capital is like a relationship. It's like, you can't just go to, and I wouldn't go to every guy in the world and be like, I want to date you. Right. I mean, essentially it's a partnership. So like, I wouldn't take it personal. If you don't want to work with me, that's cool. That's like that's like me going up to a list of five guys and saying, well, I don't really want him, but I'll look at those four. Mm. All right. Maybe you're in the wrong niche, or I just don't vibe with you, or whatever it is. Essentially, like, the relationship you have with your VC is so vital that you do have to be picky. And I'm sorry, but Kevin should have known, like, he should know that. And I guess because it was on TV, it just hit his ego a little bit. And he's always picked on for his ego. But yeah. I don't know. I think they were both wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, someone else I'm a big fan of as well is Mike Rowe. And one of the things he said with his interview over with Tim Ferriss that I listened to over the weekend, mm-hmm. and another, you know, just like Tim Ferriss's, you know, interviews are over 2 hours long. And, you know, so, but being a big fan of Mike Rowe, I put in the time. However, one of the things that they were talking about was that you shouldn't necessarily make your passion your work. However, when you work, you should bring your passion. And Tim loved this quote. And I have to say, I think it's pretty spot on. But, you know, another point that a guest of mine has said in his book, again, being Mark Nathan, is that when you're working your passion, it's not going to be easy. And in fact, lots of millennials struggle because they quit with when things get hard, or they have problems with consistency, or, you know, what's your thoughts on working in passion?
Well, I disagree. I think you should always work on your passion. I don't think you should necessarily just bring your passion into it, because, I mean, look, like I always say, you only get what you give. So if you're not giving, I wholeheartedly believe that we're put on this planet because we all have something special mm-hmm. to give. 100%. We all have something special to give. There's the guy who likes to do the garbage work, and there's the guy who likes to be a hedge fund manager. But there's a person for everything in this world. And, you know, if you're not utilizing what you like, you're essentially taking away from somebody who could be doing what they love. Like, if I'm going and I'm working exactly. in a company, I'm taking away the position of somebody else who really wanted it. Like, that's not cool. You know, and
I love that you just said that, actually.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. I mean, it's not, because you know how many speakers are trying to compete? I mean, they're not going to compete against me. They can't, because this is my calling and it's not theirs. But if you're, you know, there's so many people just trying to take that position, and it's like, move. Like, you shouldn't be there. Like, you haven't done anything. Like, stop faking it, or stop, like, you know, it's like if I were to go and try and speak about, like, I don't know, like to a sports team about a specific sport that I've never played. It's kind of just like, you don't belong there. Mm-hmm. That's not your position. Go play your position. Like, in a team, you ever play sport and they like come in front of you and you're like, dude, you weren't in your position. Like, stay in your position. Stop stepping out of your title. I say this in my Gary Vee speech. Too many of us step out of our title. And when you step out of your title, you're not an expert in anything. And I'm not a fan of that. You know, like, I don't want to go to a guy who's working a job he doesn't like, but just utilizing his passion in it, because he's not going to do the job right. What am I supposed to go work like a corporate job and just bring my speaking into it? Like, I can't really, like, every time I pick up the phone, is that my passion?
Right.
That doesn't work. So like, for me, I'm just like, I want to deal with experts. When I'm hiring somebody for whatever it is, for marketing, to become, you know, a manager, security behind my back. If I'm going to a shopping store and I want a fashion designer, or I'm calling an insurance company, whatever it might be, I want an expert on the phone, because I don't have time to waste with somebody who doesn't love what they're doing and giving me attitude, or they're just like, oh, please hold, please hold, please hold. Or they're like, I want an expert, and I'm going to pay the extra for an expert. So when you're an expert, you also get paid more. You know, I was speaking to my friend about Eric Thomas. He was telling a story, and he was telling a story of how he had flying squirrels up in his roof. And his wife is freaking out, and his daughter's freaking out, and he's like, I got to get rid of this. And so he calls up the company, and they're like, all right, well, it's going to be, you know, X amount of money. I think it was like $500 or something like that. And it'll be gone in a week and a half. And Eric is like, no, I need this gone like today. And they're like, okay, I mean, we can send somebody, but it's going to be $1,500 if it's gone today. And he's like, done. I'll pay for that. And everyone's like, you know, why would you pay? Why? Like, why would you do that? That's a lot of money. And he's like, because he's an expert. He doesn't do squirrels. He doesn't do rats. He doesn't do rabbits. He just does flying squirrels. So he deserves to be paid because it's all he does. That's all he does. He knows it so well that I know it's going to be taken care of, you know? And if that's all he does, then he has to jack up his price a little bit. He's been doing it for years. He's an expert at what he does. And being that expert gives you the privilege to be paid more because of the experience behind your back, especially if it's with what you love. This is the other story I told in my speech is about Picasso, right? He was on the street one day and he was painting a picture, blah, 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 blah. And he turns to the girl and he's like, all right, it's going to be $30,000. And the girl's like, well, you did that in 30 seconds. And he goes, no, it took me 30 years to do that in 30 seconds. So now it's worth $30,000. So I'm not a fan of that whole like do whatever and then bring your passion into it. I'm a fan of go deep into your passion.
Well, that's pretty darn clear to me, Ashley. And I just want to say I watched several of your videos on YouTube and I just really noticed how much energy you bring and how much passion you bring. So I'm happy that you actually went into that a little bit with us.
Thank you.
So, yeah, totally. Actually, the other thing that struck me was that your energy and your messages are really similar to someone that I stumbled on maybe 2 or 3 years ago. His name is Mateusz M. You guys both create extremely powerful content and somehow you guys are aligned and it just all of your stuff.
I gotta look into that.
I'll send you a link later on.
Yeah.
But Brendon Burchard talks about how people live a caged life. You've probably heard about it. Where they're like a wild animal, you know, like striking out all the time at the world or anything that actually confronts them. They don't know how to deal with confrontation. Yeah. And then on the other hand, of the other end of the spectrum, there's the comfortable life where most people are just fine. You know, it's all fine. Right. And then he talks about this thing called the charged life. And that one core aspect of the charged life is that charged people want to help others level up. They actually live life fully. So I'm super curious because right now I get that you are living a charged life. You are living like awesome, like total kudos. So the question is, though, do you believe you were ever living a caged life? And I think just from what you said earlier, we can probably talk a little bit more about that. But if you were caged, how did you really move yourself from caged to charged? Like, really, what was that process? You said you sat with yourself, you got to know yourself, but like, what was that really?
Oh, yeah, it was difficult. I mean, I definitely lived a caged life when I was sick and before I was sick because I was like, I would lie about who I am to pretend that I was better than I am. Like, I mean, it was terrible. I was mentally sick. And the way to get out of that was to take all that out of me. And I, like, every time I looked in the mirror, like, I knew, like, if it's just me in the mirror, like, I can call myself a liar because I can look in the mirror and I can't hide from myself. Nobody can. So it was like me, like, in the hospital, one of the things I did was approach every person I lied to. I mean, I literally picked up the phone and I told them what I lied about and why I lied and how I felt. And some of them hung up the phone and were pissed. And some of them were just like, look, we understand you're upset, you're sick, blah, blah, blah. I really am happy that you called. And they were supportive. But the thing about that was, okay, so that's one negative thing about me that made me live a caged life. And taking that out of my system means I'm no longer that person. I'm no longer a liar because I told the truth. And even though it was postponed, as if there's no lies out there in the world, I can't call myself a liar. Now I can't. Now I'm an honest person.
Right.
So,
and the power that comes with that, what was that like?
I mean, at first it's hard. At first it wasn't power. At first it was more like it was shame, embarrassment, blah, 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 which then turned into power. Because sometimes you have to, everything in life, like I say, you only get what you give. So since I gave something negative, I had to punish myself. And it was okay to feel that shame because I deserved that shame, you know? And some people say like, well, why would I do that if it didn't feel good or blah, 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 blah. Well, you have to be honest with yourself. You know, do you punish a kid for lying? Yeah, you do. So punish yourself too. You know, you're not any different. You have to learn a lesson somehow. So what I would do is I'd put myself in a position that would embarrass me and give me that punishment so that I don't ever go back there again.
Got it. You know? Okay, got it.
So, but yeah, later it definitely turned into power because it was a lesson. I taught myself a lesson, and lessons are always power, but everything in life is a lesson. So everybody in this world has power. It's whether you use it or not. You know, everyone's like, oh, well, I want to feel powerful. Okay. Everybody has power within them. Everybody. It's just, like I said, it's just
already there.
Are you using it? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's already there because you're given that from day one. But it's definitely, amazing to live a free life.
No kidding. And so for people listening, like, what's one thing someone can do? You know, maybe it is fessing up to a lie and actually just being straight about it. But what's one thing that you would say that someone listening can do right now to step into a charged life?
Yeah. The first thing I would do is, if there's anybody in this world that you might have done anything wrong to, like even the slightest thing, like literally text them or call them a sincere apology. And like, you're going to feel just, I mean, it's a little weird at first, but you're going to feel so much better about like who you are, your authenticity, no longer lying to yourself. I mean, lying to myself was what held me back. Like trying to be, I know in the beginning, you know, you guys mentioned that I did a little bit of coaching. It's something I don't do anymore, but, you know, I didn't feel like that was, I was an expert at that age when I was doing coaching. And, instead of chasing the little money that came with it, I was like, this isn't who I am. And like being authentic about that, being honest about it. Like I literally told some of the people that I was coaching and I was like, I'm going to use this money to like fly out to you and just coach you for free because this isn't my money. And I did. I flew out to a few places because it wasn't my money. And that felt so good. Like it felt awesome. So good to just be able to do that. So I think being honest with yourself is the way to set yourself free.
Thank you for saying that. And I totally agree. It's definitely it's like you get confronted because you don't want to admit something, but then when do you have that experience of like, wow, I just did that and I'm still alive, I'm still okay, and by the way, I still have like all of my power. Well, that's cool. So
yeah, I don't know what it is about confrontation of oneself and people are so afraid of. Like, I spent 9 hours staring at myself in the mirror when I was in the hospital. Mm. Like, that is the ultimate confrontation.
No kidding. So funny. Man, and, like, you've come out of it so strong. I love it. And just, you know, going back into the coaching side of things, I'm curious because I myself am a coach. You had coaching clients, and one of the things that JC likes to always focus on, so I want to bring it up, is, you know, when you had your first paying client there, even if it wasn't necessarily the thing that you wanted to do forever and it wasn't your authentic expression of yourself, how did you get that first paying client?
Honestly, again, I don't do anything unless the market validates itself. So I had like a lot of people asking me. I didn't have to go get my client. It was just like, can you coach me? Can you coach me? Can you coach me? And I was like, okay.
You're like, fine.
And then, I made the time for it. And then, I mean, I still have people to this day. Can you mentor me? Do you have any of this program? And I'm like, no, I don't. For me, like, I'm 21 years old, and yes, I've gone through a lot of experience. Yes, I'm an expert on the mind, but I'm not an expert in sitting on the phone with somebody and coaching them like that. I'm an expert at, okay, if you're in front of me face to face at a seminar, I'm gonna like rip apart your head and put it right back in the right order.
Sounds like, extremely violent.
Yeah.
Well, she's from Jersey. That's how they roll.
I know. That's how we roll. but like, I think that there's a complete art to teaching in a certain form. And a lot of people that were coming to me wanted to do this on like a consistent basis, which for me was like, I can, but I also, I guess like, I think it was more of like also taking people's money that were so young that bothered me. And I was like, I can't do that. Like, I just can't, this doesn't sit well with me. And I like, for the people who were like 15, 16, I was like, here's your money back. Like, I don't want it. I was like, this feels weird. I don't want it.
Well, and that raises up an interesting, kind of going back to what Brendan talks about, is that, you know, why not, instead of, because he puts his coaching on the premium end, where a lot of new people will put their coaching on the, you know, lowest tier, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one of the things that comes to mind is like, okay, instead of doing that, and especially helping people, you know, from A to Z, person A to person Z with the exact same problem, make a product for that, right? And get that out there. And then, you know, if you do want to do coaching, that comes after your engagements and after your workshops and all that sort of stuff. But with all the distractions that you got in your early 20s, which again, there might be, and maybe you're just really focused on career, which I knew a lot of people like that in engineering, a lot of girls like that in engineering. Mm-hmm. How do you find yourself? How do you stay consistent? What's your typical week look like these days?
Okay. So like I said, that's the problem with doing something that you don't like and just bringing passion into it, mm-hmm. is that you're not going to be consistent because you don't love it. And who's consistent in something they don't love?
No one.
Nobody, exactly. But there's another side of that where it's like, you're never going to feel like it. Too many people are waiting till they feel like it, you know, and that's a problem because you're never going to feel like it because, like I said, the mind only conceives up to survival and the rest is up to you to reprogram in your head. So I'm writing a book. It's called I've Conditioned Myself This Way. Mm. And that line is so powerful because it really explains how I got to this point. And if you can understand that your mind does nothing further than literally survival, mm-hmm. yep, then, and the rest of the reconditioning is up to you. If you can really understand that, then you can say, okay, I need to set aside 21 days to create a habit in my mind for every single thing above that I want to do. So for speaking for me, because I loved it, that was my calling. I didn't really have to create a consistency, but when it came to like editing and it came to following up on Instagram and Snapchat, like I don't like doing that. I just want to go out there and speak. I wish somebody else could book everything for me and I just have to show up. You know what I mean? I'll get on the plane and I'll show up. But that's not the way it was. So I had to condition my brain for 21 days. And the problem with too many people, like I said, they're waiting till they feel like doing something. It's not going to come because your mind doesn't support it. So if you're, like, for example, waiting to go to the gym and you want to be consistent in the gym, you have to fight through 21 days of not feeling like it. Mm. And once you do that, then it becomes instinct. Then it becomes habit. And everything in my life was like that. I was like, okay, I really want to become this person, and I know I'm not going to feel like it, right? Because I know my brain is only up to survival. This is an extra. This is a cherry on top. I need to do it myself. So the first 21 days, I need to fight through it. And if you can't fight through it, quite frankly, you don't deserve the reward at the end, you know, because nothing in life is free, and you got to fight for something. So the first 21 days are kind of like a test that I think the universe puts in front of you and says, you want it that bad, come and chase it. And then if you could chase it consistently for 21 days, then you win. Now I'm going to make it a little bit easier for you, and it's going to become a habit. You know, just like I wake up in the morning to go brush my teeth, use the bathroom, whatever, my morning routine is the same instinct I have to go to the gym. Like, I never think to myself, like, oh, I don't want to go to the gym today, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, for me, it's just like, all right, I had breakfast, let's go outside, let's go for a run, let's run to the gym real quick. Boom, I come home and I'm like, all right, now it's on my list to do things. Like, it's part of my natural thing. I don't even think about it because I made it a habit. But if you can't fight through 21 consistent days, then you're never going to feel like it, and you're going to continue questioning why it's easy for other people and not easy for you. And it's not really anything complex. It's just that the brain, the way that it's developing, is it only does things, it only wants you to just reproduce and live. Survive, reproduce. They want the world to keep going. Mm-hmm. And to be great, it takes a lot more than that, you know?
Right. And
you got to fight for it. You have to fight for it. And if you don't want to fight for it, then too bad, you're not getting it. That's just how I see it. So that's why we instinctually have so much respect for people who do so much. But it's nothing like foreign. It's not like something alien. I mean, the hospital was completely me just reconditioning my brain 21 days with this, 21 days with that, 21 days with this, 21 days with that. And I mean, that they didn't tell me to do that, but that's what I've seen worked for myself. Like, that was what I did personally in my head. I was like, all right, clearly, like, I can't wait until I feel like getting better. Like, I just have to get better or else I die. So I had to create something in my head that was like, you know, this is what's going to work. And this rule that I created with like the 21 days, I've realized how much it works.
Awesome. So then out of that, what gave you the idea to start doing the YouTube series? Like, you did all this personal work internally, mm-hmm. and then you at some point decided to start putting it externally. So like, what gave you that idea?
So actually, somebody from Toronto, they own the YouTube channel Ping Pong Studio, and they reached out to a friend and I and said that, well, to my friend and said, I want you to do a video, because he had a video on YouTube. And he reached out to me and said, well, I want you to write it or whatever. So we sat there and we wrote it. And then we had a bunch of other, like, few people. We had a few celebrities, a few football players, a bunch of people that were in our circle. And we were like, let's just all speak the speech. And we did. And we sent it back to him, and he edited it up really nicely. And the feedback was like, who's that girl? Who's that girl? Who's that girl? Who's that girl? And the guy who owned the channel is like, you need to open up a YouTube channel, because him and I are really close. And I was like, eh, like, whatever. And then he's like, no, like, you need to open up a YouTube channel. And I was like, all right. So I went on the computer, I opened it up, and he's like, okay, so do this, this is what you do, blah, blah, blah. He taught me through the whole thing. And then I put up my first video, and the first video hit 400,000. And I was like, okay, I need to do something about this.
Yeah, that's totally awesome.
Yeah, and then, I mean, most of my work now is on other people's channels, because I like to leverage, I'm a marketer, so I like to leverage other right. people's while also bringing them value. Mm-hmm. So, like, I put one video out, and it hit 1.7 million on somebody else's channel. That one really leveraged my opportunity. You know, and it just kind of tumbled over from there. And then it started, YouTube started paying me. So then from YouTube, I started reinvesting into new camera, a new, you know, new stuff. And then kind of just turned into, it just slowly develops. The more you put into it, the more you get out.
Yeah. Love it. So then one question came up for me while I was watching the videos, just sort of curious, like, do you have any worry about companies telling you you're infringing on their copyright since your videos use like clips from movies and clips from speeches, stuff like that? Or does that
not sometimes
happen?
It doesn't really happen, but sometimes, like, if it's like a big producing company like Warner's Brother, then I'll shoot them a direct to ask
Great.
Them.
Awesome.
But if I'm not making money off of it, it shouldn't be a problem. It's just, if there's a specific video that says that there's a copyright infringement, you can still have it up there, but you're not allowed to make money off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you can't have any ads going on that particular video, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Got it.
Yes.
Okay, cool. That was just one thing that came to mind. I was like, how does that work?
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah.
Okay, so you can totally use clips, but just don't put an ad on it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you can try to monetize it, but at some point it'll say, like, this is a copyright infringement, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
And don't get me wrong, I'm sure that companies can come after and do a lawsuit, but quite frankly, it's number one, there's also, I like to read my legal scripts in there of YouTube, and I read through it, and it says also for educational purposes. There are some,
right.
Yeah, so if you say it's
exceptions.
For educational use, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Nice.
Awesome.
I like that.
Yeah.
Good to know. And, like, awesome that you're so thorough that you'll read YouTube's legal scripts.
Yeah,
that's badass.
Who does that? But
yeah. Going the extra mile. But anyway, go ahead, JC.
You were saying that you had started, like, what was it, 18, 17, you were already starting to do speaking engagements?
So my first speaking gig was at 17. I spoke about my anorexic story. While I was actually still in the hospital. But I was at a point where I was doing a lot better mentally, and now it was just creating that consistency of meal plan of, like, this is, you have to eat these certain things in a day. It's kind of like macros, following some macros and making sure your body's getting all these nutrients and gaining weight. And I was just speaking to another facility about my experience in all that, because towards the end of it, I think they started to pick up on how mentally there I was. So they were like, yeah, we want you to go speak here. So I went and spoke there, which was really cool. It was another eating disorder facility up in Somerset, New Jersey. And then it kind of, it didn't really start there, though. That's not where my speaking career started. My speaking career, I would say, started after I did that one YouTube video for the Toronto-based film company, Ping Pong Studio.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would say that's my first speaking
wow.
engagement. Cool. Yeah.
And how do you remember how that particular, I mean, if again, coming from someone that wants to become, go into the speaking world, right?
Mm-hmm.
How would you, if you were to offer advice for someone to get their first engage or their first gig, how would mm-hmm. you, what would you tell them to do?
I think that I hate this answer, but I think it's just partially true. Some of it is luck, because I think part of every success is there's a little bit of luck. You know, mine being that, who, you know, what other girl, I have no competition. Like, what other girl is doing what I'm doing?
Right.
You know, some are speaking, but they're like, oh, so this is how you do sales. And, like, well, I'm like, I'm about to rip your face off. Like, you know?
Right. So I mean, you're the young female version of Gary in a way, right?
Yeah, I totally
everybody
get that
says
as well.
That.
It's insane.
I don't see it. I don't think I'm like him, but it's okay.
Yeah, but you're both from the same age. I mean, isn't he Jersey material? Or?
Yes, he's from Jersey.
So there you go. I mean, that's what it is.
Oh, that makes us so alike.
No.
I mean, I think we're definitely different. I think that he's more, I think that he has a different niche. I mean, he's a marketer completely. And I studied the brain psychology. I mean, business is a huge part of that because I can tap into business with it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, I mean, we're different, but
of course.
I think I have no competitive edge. I mean, I have no competition.
You have
most
the
people,
competitive edge.
I was going to say other people don't have the competitive edge. And it's like, you know, if you put me next to any other female, they're going to pick me for motivation. So anywhere I go, it just stands out and people are just like, we want her. Yeah, we want her. Especially female empowerment things like all those types of events. I definitely take over those. And it's just more about getting my name out there, and it's getting your name out there. Like there's always a certain niche for you. You just have to market correctly. I mean, like you said, my name is very user-friendly and searchable on the internet. So it's making yourself available like that and showing up for different meetings and different calls. And, you know, my morning starts off with 10 cold calls a day, and usually 4 of them follow through, you know.
Nice.
Actually, you want to hear a funny story? My first – I'm really good at accents. So my first cold call that I ever did – I don't do cold calls anymore, but I used to. But my first cold call that I ever did that got me my first speaking engagement – I pretended to be my own agent. So when I called up, I was like, hello, this is Alexis from, you know, the UK, and I'm, you know, serving Ashley Zahabian, and we wanted to have a discussion with you about like an opportunity for her. And like, I literally just switched my accent.
That's great. Love
and
that.
And they were like, oh yeah, just put us in contact with her. It was really funny. I cracked up after.
So is Lisa real?
Lisa's real.
Lisa's real. Okay.
Yes. But I literally just switched my accent, and I got the first. That was the funniest thing ever. I got the first speaking engagement like that. But awesome. Yeah, so I did like 10 cold calls a morning until I got Lisa.
Gotcha.
But
Lisa's her assistant, by the way.
Oh, got it.
So, Lisa does all my back end work.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I mean, it's. If I were you to get your first speaking engagement, I would just not focus on getting the first speaking engagement. I would wait until people are asking you. I think that's the best way to serve the market. A lot of people have stage fright because they're up on stage to the wrong market and they're just taking any speaking gig. Like, I got a $15,000 offer, and then when I found out who was going to be there, I was like, no, like, I'm not doing this one. And they're like, why? And I was like, because it's not my market. Like, I don't want to go on stage and feel like I'm serving the wrong market. Like, I'd rather, like, I don't care about the money. Like, I want to go up there and know that every single person there came because they knew exactly what they were getting out of it, and they wanted to see and hear me. Like, that's more important to me than being like, oh, I could speak at this, you know, this event that has nothing to do with what I speak about, but just because you're putting people there and paying me. Like,
no.
Yep.
You want people to come to you and be like, we want to hear you specifically speak.
Right.
Nice.
Because then you can't do bad. You can't do a bad job because people already know who you are and they're a fan of you.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You ever go to a concert, you go to like, you know, an Alicia Keys or Beyonce concert, and then they have an opening act and you're like, I didn't ask for you. And nobody's like excited during the opening act because it's like, I didn't come for you.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that person.
Moving on real quick. How do you see the next 3 to 5 years going and growing in your business?
Sure. So by this year, I'm going to be planning out a world tour, which is really the bigger aim for me. I really want to get through that world tour. And I want to do it with a bunch of my favorite speakers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of young upcoming speakers that I'm a fan of. But they're all over the world, and I want to be able to travel with them. And, you know, one of the things I'm very passionate about is creating a family environment, not just like, well, you're a business partner and you're a business. Like, I want to create a family. So one of the things I talk to a lot of the almost, I would say almost every top motivational YouTube channel I've spoken to about doing like a getaway bonfire trip where we all sit around a bonfire on a mountain. We're going to, you know, rent out a place and just all have like a mastermind together. And that to me is what I live for. Like I live for that. So I want to be able to create that on a world tour and have everybody learn that comes and whoever knows everybody. And it helps everybody because, you know, if I'm traveling with X person, then when we both go on stage, all my fans now know him and all his fans now know me. And we're all growing together. We're providing value to the place. We're traveling and having fun. Like you can't lose.
Right.
Like there's no loss there. And then the other thing is my book. My book should be coming out this summer.
Oh, okay. And yeah, what do you have a time frame for when you're wanting to have that hopefully out or?
Probably August.
Okay, cool, cool. Yeah, going back to what you were saying, as far as putting a group together, I guess you can kind of call me a Nick Fury type myself.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of in the zone for, you know, connecting Avengers together sort of thing. So that's I kind of completely understand where you're coming from there for sure.
Yeah, super fun.
That's cool. Next segment coming up real quick is rapid fire questions. And just like other shows, this is something that, you know, the questions are quick, but the answers don't necessarily need to be. Okay.
Yep.
So take your time, explore, whatever.
Yep.
All right. So all right. The first one is, what are three truths that you found out over the years that you'd want to share with others?
Three truths. Let's see. You are your worst enemy unless you condition your mind to be the opposite. So that's number one. Number two, you cannot ask for a one and get a two. You must put in two to get two.
What's that mean?
One plus one equals two. So you can't put in one. You can't put in one in the world and expect life to give you a two. You can't expect to get more than you put in.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, that's number two. And then that never works. And number three is when you do get something that's higher than what you've put in. So if I win the lottery, you know, I didn't work for the money, but I get it. It will always crash. Always. So even when somebody comes up to me and they want to do a business deal and they're like, okay, so we'll do this. But and I see they're giving me more value than I'm giving them. I'll run the other way. Like the $15,000 deal. I was like, that's dangerous because I'm not putting in $15,000 worth of effort in this crowd because they're not my crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's dangerous. I'm running the other way because it'll always crash. Always.
Right. Right. I like that. Cool. Next question is who are three teachers or influencers in the creative business or other worlds that have influenced you to where you've been today? Are today
three influencers in my niche. Let's see. Eric Thomas, definitely a huge influencer. Inky Johnson, another huge influencer. And Gary Vee.
Sure. We'll go with Gary Vee. Why not? Like that.
He's been one of the top for sure.
Cool. If you could have every high school graduate in the U.S. Consume, you know, read, watch, whatever, two to a couple things, what would you prescribe for those students or graduates?
Yeah, I would tell them to documentaries on the human mind. I think there's nothing more powerful than learning about yourself. You can learn from other people, but learning from yourself is the most powerful tool. And I think that's what high schoolers lack today is knowing who they are. Because they're so out there trying to be other people because they see it works that they forget to just look in the mirror and be like, I can't use what they have. I don't have the childhood that they have. I don't have the money that they have. I don't have the life that they have. I don't have like I need to start with the mirror. I need to start where I am now. Cause that's what essentially brought me the awareness to start with where I am. You know, if I continue to look outside to other people, I would have never moved forward myself. It almost freezes you up. So to stop looking outside and use those years.
Do you think that's more of a issue because of how education is today or that's just more of our society as a whole?
I think that it's a problem with education.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge problem with education. I'm a huge fan of education. Don't get me wrong. I love education. I just think that the education we're getting isn't the right education.
High five.
Yeah.
Cool. What's something else that you'd prescribe?
I would prescribe everybody a therapist. That's a weird answer. I think that everybody in the world needs a therapist.
I think I was listening to Jordan Arbinger last night, and he was mm-hmm. talking to someone this past week that was maybe not this past week, but definitely this past month in May, that basically she's in the therapy world herself, and she basically said the same thing. And it's like, it's not something that you need to fear in getting a therapist, right? Or going after a psychiatrist. But it's, you know, because no one would question you if you went to go help with getting your car worked on, right? So why have that stigma when you're going to get help for yourself, right?
Well, it is a stigma. And I think the biggest thing is that essentially the number one business in the world is religion.
Mm.
And religion is therapy. That's what it is, you know? Whatever it is that you believe in, the universe, God, whatever it is that you believe in that brought religion to this world, you know, the reason that it's here is to guide us because we don't know ourselves and we need something to guide us. Does that mean that you're crazy if you have a therapist? No, it means the same thing. You got a little lost and you need some guidance. So when, you know, it's like a parents meet this girl. And she's like, oh, this girl went through therapy. She must be psycho. But this girl's religious. She's an amazing girl because she works on herself. And, you know, it's the same thing. Like, I tell people that all the time. I'm like, dude, I've been with a therapist for 4 years of my life.
Mm.
And I'd have no problem ever returning back to one if I needed it.
Right.
Because it's the same. I just don't see the problem with it at all. Well, I think I look up to you if you have a therapist. Good for you.
Yeah. And when I was going through school, I'm glad to say, because the first couple of years I was coming out of high school and I didn't have to feel like I needed to study. Right. And so when I hit college and I finally learned that I had to learn how to study, then it was like, I went through depression like 3 times in 2 years. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's when I picked up, you know, therapy and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, godsend for sure. So.
Well, it's the same thing as like, you know, me talking to you right now, because it's the same thing as a teacher. Teacher teaches us about ourselves, teaches us about the world. Therapist just does it in a different way.
Right. Nice. Next question. What would you tell the 13-year-old version of yourself, i.e. being the girl that before you went through the battle with anorexia?
There's a lot I would tell myself, but I definitely wouldn't tell myself not to go through what I did. I would tell myself to have started my passion even younger. So even if I was going through all that pain, to have documented it. I wish I'd documented it.
Mm. Nice.
Yeah.
And who is the first person that comes to mind when you give the description, or who's the first person that comes to mind when you think of success and why?
Elon Musk, because in my eyes, he's the true humble. I mean, if you hear his story, he was depressed for several years and he didn't even leave his bed. And then he created several companies. I mean, he used PayPal. He got a few hundred million from that. And he literally invested every single penny back into the next few companies where he had to actually, ask for money for rent.
Mm.
Like, he didn't even have money for rent. That to me, when you dig your head so deep into what you love and you just don't even care about everything else, you don't care about your money, you don't care about anything, and you just dig it into a purpose and you're so consistent. I mean, he's such a perfectionist with his work. Like, he will continue to work until it works so well and it's the best thing. And like, he doesn't just compete a little bit. He makes it so different that it's non-competable. Like Tesla, I mean, the perks that Tesla has and even the new car that it has, SpaceX, PayPal, like the things he comes up with are so non-competable that like he just rises and shines above everyone else. And he to me is the true definition of somebody who understands their purpose and uses their pain for something better and then stays humble about what they receive and reinvest it back into the world. And he's only going to get more from that. And I love that.
Awesome. Yeah.
And I love hearing that he also came from a place of depression, because it shows that where you come from doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, honestly, I would say that here's again, come Gary coming up into the conversation. It's like, use that really bad background that you have as a springboard to get into a great future. But at the same time, if you have lived a comfortable life most of your life, use that as a springboard too. Don't make it an excuse, because so many people do, right?
Yeah, I think that like your childhood is a huge aspect of who you become, and that's another part of luck that I have. I really like, number one, I'm born in America. Number two, I'm born in, I'm raised in Paramus, which is like the nicest, like one of the nicest towns, mm-hmm. and the safest towns. And then on top of that, I have like two of the best parents in the world. You know, I live in a beautiful place. I'm placed in a very lucky circumstance. But maybe the emotional aspect of my life was in the dirt. But again, you can't really plant seeds outside of the dirt. So for me, it was like, sometimes when people are born in too lucky of a position, you know, I was lucky, but then I also had my struggle. But if you don't have a struggle at all, it's like,
yeah,
throw yourself in the dirt.
You don't have that fire. Yeah.
You can't plant a seed. You can't.
Right.
Yeah. I can't plant a seed in midair. It's not possible. You know, you got to put it in the dirt.
Yeah. Go. And in fact, I would suggest, and this is one of the things that Mike Rowe suggested on Tim's show, was that go live. You know, just go out there into the world, especially when you're young, maybe even between, especially between the ages of high school and college.
Go just sleep in a car.
Yeah.
Go sleep outside.
Yeah.
Go get bit by bugs. Go, I don't know, like go create some turbulence in your life. And I tell people that all the time when they're like, I just like don't know what I want to do with my life. I'm like, you need to shake your life up. You need some turbulence, because there's no way that you're going to ever find what you want to harvest if you're not under the dirt. And even when you're under the dirt, what happens when a seed starts to harvest? It breaks apart completely. It starts to rip. You know, you need that. You need to rip apart in order to plant a new seed.
Go be Bruce Wayne in Gotham right now, because that's what he's doing. He's hanging out with Selena Kyle,
yeah.
and learning what it's like to be people on the streets. And that's part of how he becomes Batman. So go do that. I love it. So ending up today, what can people go to, or what can they do to move themselves more forward into already, besides what we just said, I guess, but what are some resources that they can read or find to move their work into more of a charged position from a comfortable position?
Well, I read books that aren't about specific niches, because it teaches me about myself, not necessarily, like, I'm not a biographer, like, I like reading about people's stories, mm-hmm. but it has to be something that can be applicable to myself. So number one is read books that have to do with whatever it is that you're going through. I mean, I can give you a bunch of names of books, but until I know exactly like what you're going through, who you are, what kind of person you are, I can't really give you the exact names of specific books. Mm-hmm. That could help you with that. But more generalized books, like there's this one book called Eat That Frog. That one helped me with habit, because that book is about doing the dirtiest thing in the morning first, because our minds, it just tells you about the whole psychological aspect of your mind being able to do the harder things in the morning first and much more productively. That was a really good read. The Secret is a great read. Other than reading, I would say spend time alone. That was my thing. Like, spending time alone is what brought me to the next level, because, like I said, you can't hide who you are when you're by yourself, because nobody's looking at you. And when the more you get to know yourself, the more stable you become, because you get to adapt to your emotion. You spend time with it. And I'm not talking about by yourself, meaning taking a walk and blasting rap music in your ears. Like, I'm talking about, like, seriously, like, I'm talking about going on a hike with no music and, like, listening to your emotion and listening to yourself and listening to nature. And like sitting with that feeling of isolation and being able to deal with yourself. And the more you can deal with yourself, it's so much easier to deal with others. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times that people have done things that are so wrong to me, and it doesn't move me. It doesn't move me, because I'm just like, that's them. That's them. Like, I know how to deal with you because I've dealt with myself in that way. You know, I've dealt with alcoholics. I've dealt with, it's just so much easier for me to deal with those types of people, because I've been able to deal with myself myself, and I can pick up on specific emotions that they're feeling and not take it personally. It helps me control my, you know, anger. I don't feel, it's so hard to get me angry now because everything I go through, I just understand it. And instead of getting angry at it, I know where it comes from. And it doesn't bother me because I've been there, you know. And if you can't go through your own emotions, you can't go through others. And if you can't handle other people, you can't do business, you can't start a career for yourself, you can't have a family. I mean, it's the foundation of everything is understanding yourself.
Which is so important. Nice. I love that. Ashley, as we're ending things up today, what are some places that people can find you and connect with you best on? What platforms?
Sure. Yeah. So most of my handles are just at Ashley Zahabian. That's my Instagram. It's my Twitter. My YouTube, if you type in Ashley Zahabian, should be there. Well, it will be there. My Medium at Ashley Zahabian. I think the only thing that's different is my Snapchat, which is Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y, and then my middle name, which is Fereshte, means angel in Persian. So it's
I thought that was a Persian name. One of my other co-hosts, Layla, is Persian. I want to connect you to because she spent most of her growing up life trying to get into NASA and realized that when she got there, that it was not anything like she expected it to be. And is now recreating herself as a coach, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, cool. That's cool.
Sure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, definitely a pleasure having you on. And
Thank you guys so much. This is super fun, Ashley. I love your energy. Like, I would love to talk to you separately. And
absolutely. Fun. Absolutely. Awesome. Thanks so much. Amazing. Well, thanks again for having me.
Definitely a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Alrighty, guys, I hope you enjoyed that great chat with Ashley. If you want to find out more about her, you can find her over at ashleyzahabian.com. And as usual, all of the information that you need for today's show is at newinceptions.com/session44. Show note extras for this session include some videos that Ginger and I handpicked from Ashley's library. The first video is her first motivational video that she used to herself as the subject material. Kind of talking about being superhuman, and I think we can actually talk about it a little bit in the conversation. Next on the list is the video that introduced her to me on Facebook. It was definitely viral on Facebook. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have seen it. I had no idea who she was before I saw that video. And the third video of her is doing the opening speech for Gary Vee at the Real Estate Club Network event in April of 2016. Her actual YouTube channel is linked in the show notes if you guys want to check out more videos after that. And finally, the last resource I have is a link to another podcast she did back in March of 2016, and it's from the website iamtheaverage.com, and it's called, the podcast itself is I Am The Average Podcast, and it's hosted by Jacob Widman. And I'll have the link for that in the show notes as well. So that's pretty much it for this particular episode. A big thank you to Ginger and Ashley for coming on to make it a future star-studded session. And, you know, they're both going places in a big, big way this year. In next week's session of the Angles of Latitude podcast, join me again as my co-host Layla and I talk with another woman solopreneur, Melinda Enfinger. Like Ashley, Melinda is a rock star at what she does, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to sit down with her. She was an active Marine for 9 years and now finds herself working with vets in multiple ways, including helping them understand all of their benefits and also helping them find great deals in real estate. Personally, I like doing these military-related shows because my wife is in the service and I hear about the struggles they go through as they come back into the civilian world. And if you know any veterans, make sure they hear next week's episode because Melinda is a walking encyclopedia of knowledge for veterans. So that said, I think that pretty much wraps up session number 44. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web at newinceptions.com.